This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Our first guest was one of the greatest cornerbacks in NFL history and also one of the game's best defensive minds. Dick LeBeau intercepted 62 passes for the Detroit Lions, third in NFL history among pure corners, and also coordinated two Super Bowl championship defenses with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was the inventor of the zone blitz and coordinated five defenses that finished number one in the NFL. Dick was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010 for his playing career, and if he didn't already have his bust as a player, he'd be a candidate for one as a coach. But this is the first October in 59 years Dick has not been on the field either as an NFL player or as a coach, which is why we invited him to join us today. For the first time in almost six decades, Dick finally has some time in the fall for his friends. Dick LeBeau, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. It's an honor to be talking to my very good friend and longtime acquaintance, Mr. Rick Goslin. Good to hear from you, pal.
Thanks, Dick. Hey, Dick. Six decades is a long time. Do you miss it?
Well, I thought once they started playing that I would miss the game some. But up until that first kickoff to start the season, I didn't miss it at all. Didn't miss any of the training camp, none of the OTAs, none of the combine scouting meetings, none of that. But I do miss the games a little bit. I miss being around the players more than anything. But I've had my time in the barrel, as they say, and I'm enjoying not having to go to work today.
Is it fun having a life?
Yeah, it is having a life, no doubt. I'm glad I didn't know about it till now.
Dick, you spent 14 years as a player in the NFL and then 45 more years as a coach. Can you compare game day experiences between that of a player and that of a coach, how they differ?
Well, they're totally different. I think the anxiety, the anticipation, all those things are the same, you know. Getting ready to compete, that part of it for me was the same as a player. I was always a little more comfortable as a player because you know you're going out on the field and you know you're going to be dealing with the football game snap by snap. When you're a coach and when you get to the level of coordinator and you're calling the defense, you're just calling the defense and hoping. It feels a little better when you got your hands on the wheel. But it wasn't too much different. I think really all of us old players that become longtime coaches, it's because we've never gotten that hunger to compete and to, on a weekly basis, go out there. You know, it isn't like putting together a sales plan and having to wait a year to see how it turned out. You're going to get the results in 7 days on your game plan for that week. And that's a pretty exciting way to live, really. There's nothing quite like the competition of two great NFL teams fighting it out in a championship game or the playoff games. That's something that I think anybody that has experienced, they would miss it some.
Okay, speaking of championships, Dick, you won a national championship as a player at Ohio State in 1957 and your first Super Bowl as a coach of the Steelers almost 50 years later. Can you compare those two experiences?
Well, one of my strengths over the years has been my memory. I remember things. I would remember situations in games, stuff that maybe the offensive coordinator did, 10 years ago when I was playing against him. Back when I was a player, something that Johnny Unitas tried, 16 games ago when we played him twice a year, Bart Starr. Those things have helped me throughout my competitive career. But I can remember very vividly our locker room in Columbus, Ohio, when we cinched the Big Ten championship. And it was... it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and we were throwing stuff on each other. I mean, you'd think we were junior high school kids or something, but I don't think anything will top that simply because we were young. But the World Championship, to win the Super Bowl, if your life's employment, really, your vocation is football or sports, and you're in the championship game and you win it. I'd gotten there twice with Cincinnati, and another time with Pittsburgh, and had lost all three of those games. And we were playing the number one offense in the league, the Seattle Seahawks, in Detroit, and they had the ball. We had a 10-point lead, and they were inside the 20, maybe the 18, 17-yard line, and they had longer yards, so I knew they were going to throw. And if we kept them out of the end zone there, it was pretty much a done deal. And I'm watching that clock, and they throw, and Ike Taylor reaches up and bats the ball down. And I'm getting ready. I'm calling, and everybody starts saying, "We did it. We did it." I said, "We ain't done nothing." I said, there's another down to go. I said, "No, coach, that was fourth down." I said, "No, there's another down to go." They said, "No, it was fourth down." So I looked at the scoreboard, and it said, I think the score was 20-10. And I sat down on the bench and watched those last seconds tick off of that clock. And, you know, there's nothing like the field when the winning team, you know, when that clock expires and the confetti starts coming down, people start going crazy. And I just sat on the bench by myself because I had a long playing career and had a long coaching career. And it began to look like I was never going to get to experience a Super Bowl championship. And I kept thinking, well, I got to be dreaming, you know. this is, I'm going to wake up, and we still got to beat the Ravens or something to qualify for the Super Bowl. But I kept saying, by God, we did do it. It was over. So I would say that's number one. And then that locker room at Ohio State when we won the Big Ten, going to the Rose Bowl and becoming national champions, those would be one and two for me, for memories.
Now, you mentioned Johnny Unitas. Of course, you played against him. Then 50 years later, you find yourself drawing up game plans to try and stop another great Colt, Peyton Manning. Which of those guys was the greater challenge?
Oh, they were both tremendous because they had great cast of characters around them. I've always thought that Peyton, for my money, was almost unstoppable because he was so good at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Brady's become that now himself. Those guys, you can't fool them. And once they know what you're doing, you can't really defend them. And they always know what you're doing. But we had some success, but by and large, if you're out there often enough against a quarterback of that caliber, they're going to get some points. They're going to get some yardage. It's a different time. It's a different game, but I'd have to say Peyton. I'd have to take Peyton, although Johnny was a tremendous accurate passer. Both of those guys, the more the team needed to drive, the more likely they were to move them down there and get what they needed to get. Another quarterback who had that characteristic, it was unbelievable, was Bobby Lane. Whenever he needed a fourth quarter drive, it seemed like he always got it. And those are the great quarterbacks. They just have been. Ben almost always delivers in that situation. He did, two Sundays ago.
Yeah. Hey, Dick, you covered Hall of Fame wide receivers Raymond Berry and Bob Hayes. And decades later, you drew up game plans for Hall of Fame receivers Jerry Rice and Randy Moss. Which was the greater challenge there?
Paul Warfield. Warfield was the only guy that I didn't have a clue on. He was a glider. Bob Hayes had won the gold medal in the Olympics, so he was the fastest man on the planet. But when he ran, actually, they don't have it now because it's artificial turf, but playing on dirt, the clods of dirt just flew up behind him like a rooster tail on the hydroplane racer. So all he had to do was watch for the dirt and get the hell out of there, man. So Hayes was not as hard to defend because you had to give him some room. You weren't going to run with him, but he let you know when he was going. And Paul was a glider. And if you took your eyes off him for a second, he was 5 yards away from where he was the last time you saw him. Raymond Berry, he never missed anything, and he had Unitas' accuracy going for him to get the ball to him. But, you know, Charlie Taylor was a great receiver. Bobby Mitchell was a great receiver. You hate to start naming them because the one thing, like I say, my memory, I've seen all these guys. That's why they put me on the committee to pick the best players in the history of the game because I've seen every one of them back at Bronco and Hershey, man.
You also played against a lot of them, of course, including the Packers of Vince Lombardi's era. And then you coached against Bill Walsh's 49ers and Bill Belichick's Patriots. In your opinion, how would those Lombardi Packers stack up against the 49ers and the Patriots of those later eras?
Well, again, it's a different era. It's a different game. But those guys, that group of players, it's been my experience. The championship teams have more than athletic building. They have the ability to seize the situation in the moment and to analyze what has to be done. They got great athletic intelligence. They know the field. They know how much time's left. They know when they got to go, and they deliver. And I think that Green Bay team, all those guys were remarkable in character, and I think that they would be champions no matter what era they're in. And I think you can say the same for the great team today. I know our great Steeler team, our great Steeler defenses, they were like one person out there. They weren't 11 guys. They were like one guy out there. And they could, I don't know, Troy would do his stuff, and the other 10 guys would know right away what the hell he was doing, and I didn't know what he was doing. But they had a unique ability to communicate, sometimes only with a look. Ryan Clark was a safety with Troy quite a few of those years, and I swear they did it with the look of the eye or some kind of flash. I mean, there was no audible communication, but Troy took off, and Ryan would always be in the right place to back him up. And together, they made a hell of a lot of plays for us. But those guys, that 07 defense of the Steelers, I think they'll be the last really low, statistically low defense. So the game is so different. You know, Seattle, when they won their title, they had a great, wonderful defense. They were tremendous. But that Steeler bunch was significantly lower statistically than Seattle. I don't think there's going to be those kind of numbers put up again the way the game's played today.
Yeah, that's sad, too. I love watching your defense, and I love watching Green's defense. Well, Dick, we appreciate you stopping by and visiting us, and keep enjoying those Sunday afternoons on the golf course.
I'm going to do that, Al, and you and I could only go probably about 3 months, the story. So if you want to talk again, give me a holler, man.
I appreciate it, Dick.
Thanks, Dick.
Have a good day. Thank you.
See you, Rick.
That was Dick LeBeau. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.